Welcome to the Mind Meets Body podcast, a space dedicated to real health conversations with a dose of self-compassion, curiosity, and imperfection. Join me, Maria Sosa of Holistically Grace, as we take a deep dive into redefining and exploring health through the mind and body. On today's show, I am so blessed to be joined by an amazing human and therapist, as she likes to say that she's a human first and a therapist second. You very well may know her from her Instagram, Lisa Oliveira Therapy. Lisa, welcome to the show. Please, please, please let us know who you are and how you define yourself, because I don't want to do that for you.
Thank you. I'm so glad to be connecting with you. My name's Lisa. I'm a therapist, a writer, a person, a partner, a student, so many things. I've been thinking a lot lately of who I am outside of all of these roles. So I like that you asked me to define that, because I'm currently working on that myself.
I love that. Something that I think about often is this idea that we define ourselves based on the things that we do, right? So I am a therapist because I do therapy, or I am a mom because this is how I have defined myself based on my role. But what happens then when we are no longer that therapist? What happens when we've changed our profession and we've changed essentially all the things that we do? Then who or what do we become? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think we are so programmed to identify with our roles and our labels and our categories and the things that we're told are important, which so often is what we do. And I think it's really challenging to think about who we are outside of what we do and who we are when we're just being, because we're not really taught how to do that. And for most of us, that wasn't modeled to us. And that's actually something I explore a lot. You know, what does it mean to be a person outside of the roles that we have? And how do we get to know ourselves outside of what we do? And how do we get to find our worthiness and our goodness and our connection and our capacity to relate to ourselves in ways that aren't just based around the things that we do in the world and the things that we show up as? Because I think, like you said, there is so many deeper layers to who people are than the things that they do. And I think, yeah, just making room to navigate that and explore that for yourself is such a gift. And it's hard because, again, we're not really taught to explore that piece of ourselves. And it's not necessarily outwardly rewarded to explore that piece of ourselves. But I think it's so, so important.
Yeah, and you brought up this idea of identity and how we identify ourselves. That I remember one of my first clients, he was having some difficulties kind of understanding who he was as a person now that he was no longer playing football. So this was somebody who had played football in high school, and this is the way that he connected with his father. This is the way that he connected with everybody in the world. And then he had concussions, which obviously led to some brain damage and his inability to continue down that path. And now he found himself as having no idea who he was outside of this identity. And then, you know, so interesting to kind of work on working through this definition of ourselves. And what do we even do when we can no longer find ourselves?
Yeah, I think that's so interesting too, if you think about family dynamics, mm-hmm. because I think so often we're sort of put into certain roles growing up in our family, whether it's the helper or the scapegoat or whatever role you might identify with that you kind of had to stay in order to stay connected to your family. When we get older and sort of split off from our immediate family and become our own people and become more independent and grow into adults, we can so often recognize that we don't actually identify with the roles that we were sort of put into, and that we don't necessarily identify with the roles we had to play out in that younger version of ourselves. And I think, again, exploring that is such a deep process, because it can cause us to sort of, yeah, disconnect from what we've known and step into this big unknown space, which is scary. And I think having a witness to that process is such a gift and so helpful. And I think, yeah, it's a process that only we can take within ourselves.
And then do you also, and this is something that I found within myself, obviously we're constantly growing and we're constantly changing. And there's this sense of, well, I'm just being a hypocrite because, you know, yesterday I believed this one thing and I was acting in this one way. And now I've learned things differently, or I want to kind of try this on, or what would this person be like if they were able to do that, or me is that person, right? How do you think that we're able to kind of understand ourselves as these changes and these shifts and forever growing beings?
Yeah, I think it's just that, like recognizing and unlearning the idea that once we pick something, we have to stay with it, or once we identify with a certain thing, we have to keep at it. I mean, that can be helpful in some sense, but I think, like you said, we are ever evolving, ever changing, multifaceted humans who are not really meant to stay the same. And I think things that are external, like jobs, relationships, where we live, what we do, are ways to sort of hold on to something certain. But within ourselves, I think we hold this like very vast inner capacity to be so many things and to change in so many ways. And because that's not necessarily supported in our society, I think so many people can sort of limit themselves to a very small range of who they actually are, when I think all of us have so many more sides and so many more aspects and so many more pieces to ourselves than we really understand or let ourselves express or get to know. And I think it can be hard to get to know those different parts of ourselves, because when we do, there can also be this process of grief in recognizing things that we haven't expressed before, or recognizing parts of ourselves we haven't let come out, or recognizing the parts of ourselves that we had to sort of shut away to stay safe. Those are just a few examples. But I think with change and transition and movement, there's also loss. And that often doesn't get recognized because it's hard. And I think it can actually keep people from leaning into the process of letting themselves unfold. And yeah, I mean, it's all so complex, but I think exploring these things is so important, because it's so freeing to remember that you don't have to stay the same, and that you can change and you can grow new ideas and new perspectives. And I think that's a beautiful thing, to let yourself become new, like over and over again.
You mentioned this idea of discouragement from society. And I often find that that's so true, because it's this need to niche down, focus on one thing, be the best thing that you can be at just one thing. We don't really encourage this idea of trying on or trying out different things, because we're just supposed to be the best at one thing. And I'm with you on that. It limits us to any of the things that we can do. And it creates this narrative for us as well. This is what I am, right? This is what I'm going to keep continuing to tell myself about who I am, or the things that I can do. And there's so many other things. How would you say that we could go about exploring all these other stories that we don't tell ourselves, or that others never tell us about ourselves?
Yeah. One thing that I think can be really powerful is thinking back to your child self, and thinking back to, if you can and if you have access to that, to what the younger part of yourself was like, and what their personality was like, and what they enjoyed, and what they were curious about, and what lit them up. I think children have this beautiful way of just living in the present and being themselves. And so often we sort of forget that part of ourselves as we grow up, but I think it holds so much information as to parts of who we are at the core. And I think another piece that can be so helpful is exploring the identities and boxes and limits and roles that you've been put in by society, or by your family, or by your culture, or by where you live. And just asking yourself, like, do I actually resonate with this? Or is this what I was told I should resonate with? Do I actually believe that this is aligned with who I am, or do I just think it's supposed to be? Is this actually a part of me, or am I going along with it because that's what I think I'm supposed to do. And sort of just getting curious about the limits that you do have around who you are and around your identity and around what you allow within yourself, and giving yourself permission to get curious about that, not from a place of criticism or judgment or needing to find an answer necessarily, but from a place of giving yourself room to explore beyond what you've made room for before. And I think a lot of people can find a lot of beautiful parts of themselves that they might not have known they even contained when they slow down enough to really listen and tune in and, yeah, just notice what you find. And I think it's an ongoing process. I don't think it's something that we do and complete. I think we can do this through all stages of our life.
That's beautiful. Yeah. This past weekend, I was kind of doing something along those lines. I was like, I really feel like eating popsicles. This is something that reminds me of my childhood. I'm going to eat popsicles all afternoon and I'm going to watch silly TV shows that aren't, you know, I find myself always in this self-improvement wheel, right? Of like, I have to watch something or learn something or be doing something productive. And I'm like, no, I need to do something fun that has nothing to do with quote unquote growing or self-improvement. And I think that we all get trapped in that. And I'm kind of curious what your thoughts are on that, of this idea of self-improvement and constantly being in that flow or in that need to improve ourselves.
Yeah. First, I love that you ate popsicles. I think that is such a sweet thing to do, to just let yourself listen to your wants and to honor them. I love that. And yeah, I mean, in this society that we live in, I think self-improvement can become a quick trap to not leaning into self-acceptance. And I think the idea that we're supposed to be constantly getting better and bigger and doing more and becoming more successful and loving ourselves even more and healing even more, like, it can all just feel like a never-ending cycle of not giving ourselves room to just pause and actually be with ourselves, and not giving us room to know that we were actually never broken and we actually never needed fixing. We just needed to sort of like come home to who we really are. And I think that is what healing is all about, is remembering our wholeness and remembering our goodness and remembering who we truly are and unlearning everything that we've sort of piled on top of that. But I think self-improvement in our culture, and especially in the whole self-care wellness world right now, it's almost sold as something to complete and something to reach and a destination that you can get by doing X, Y, and Z. And while I think growing is important, when it's done from a place of feeling like you need to grow in order to become more worthy, or in order to become better, or in order to become more desired or liked or more successful or more aligned with external expectations, it sort of always falls flat. But when you allow yourself to grow and change and shift, and when you notice what isn't working for you or what's not aligned with you, and moving from that place instead of from a place of feeling like you need to become different or you need to better yourself or you need to improve, I think that space just makes room for so much more expansion in a way that is not from a place of shame or guilt or wanting to become better than you think you are or something, but more so from a place of wholeness, which I think is what people are actually looking for. And we forget that we already have it. We forget that we already are. And so, yeah, I think exploring what your goals for self-improvement or self-bettering or self-growth are, and are those aligned with honoring the fact that you're already good and you're already enough? Or are you trying to become those things and forgetting that you already are those things?
I love that. That's so lovely. Lisa, I know that you work with couples as well. So that's something that I always think about in terms of like, okay, yes, I'm already whole and I'm already good enough, but sometimes the way that I am isn't compatible with another person, or the way that we're relating to each other isn't really the most useful. So how are those two thoughts compatible, or how do we work around the fact that yes, we are good enough as we are, and we might still need some work when it comes to our relationships and the partners that we may choose.
Yeah, I think we are good enough, but often we're not living from that place. We're living from programming, from pain, from trauma, from conditioning, from expectations. And when we're living from that place, it's hard to show up as our true selves, and it's hard to connect from our true selves, and it's hard to show up in the way we might want to. And so I think a big part of that is exploring your programming and your conditioning and the experiences you've had and the ways that you've learned how to be who you are now and the ways you've learned your behaviors and your patterns and exploring where they came from and understanding how it might actually make sense why you're showing up a certain way, especially in relationships, because I think relationships can bring out our most vulnerable stuff. You know, I think we're wounded in relationship and we find healing in relationship. So it makes sense why our stuff often gets mixed up in that. And I think noticing with compassion the things you're bringing to a relationship and exploring where that might come from and why that might be, and if that's actually aligned with who you are and how you want to show up in a relationship, is really profound. And I think also remembering that we won't be for everyone and we won't be the right fit for everyone, whether it's a partner or a friend or a business partner. You know, we can often try to force ourselves into connection that may not just be aligned with what's best for us. And so I think that's something to consider too, when folks are wondering why it's just not working, like exploring, is it actually what you want? And is it what you want to work on? And that's just a whole other piece to this. But yeah, I think exploring our stories and what we've learned about what it means to connect with people and what we've learned about what it means to be in a relationship is so healing and also just so hard, because it means we have to uncover a lot of stuff that can be painful to look at and that people avoid looking at, I think, for a reason, because it's scary and hard and we're not taught how to expand our capacity to be with that stuff.
Yeah. I think just before we started our chat, we were talking a little bit about solution-focused therapy, which is something that I was a big, huge proponent of in grad school. And it was just, this is how I view life. You know, I don't have time for all the emotions. I don't have time to kind of work through all the problematic areas of this. I need solutions. Let's move forward. Let's work on this. And that worked in my life for a certain amount of time. And then everything kind of came rushing recently, actually, and kind of understanding how much I had emotionally bypassed because of this need to always fix, to always find answers, and how difficult it really is to be, and we say it all the time, sit with your emotions, kind of sit with that. And people are like, I don't even know what that means. What does it mean to literally sit with that sadness, to sit with the fears, to sit with the pain and all the really uncomfortableness? What does that mean?
Yeah. First of all, I think a big piece of being able to do that is having a regulated nervous system. Mm-hmm. And having the inner capacity to be with what you're experiencing, because a lot of people don't have that. And so you can quickly become flooded or overwhelmed if you don't have sort of a baseline sense of safety to explore certain things. Mm-hmm. So I think doing nervous system work and self-regulation work and self-soothing work and somatic work to connect with yourself in a way that feels safe and contained is deeply important. And I don't think people can find safety to really tune inward without that. So I often tell people, before you try to sit with your feelings, make sure you have the capacity to do so, so that you don't overwhelm yourself or get flooded, or so it doesn't become too much, because that's often what deters people from doing it, is it feels really scary. And if you don't have the inner resources to be with that, then of course you don't want to be with it. But I think once you feel regulated and grounded and you have support, there are so many ways to explore your inner experiences. And research shows that our emotions only last about 90 seconds, but what makes them last longer is the story that we tell about what we're experiencing and the judgments and criticisms and curiosities we place upon our inner experience. So I think something that can be really helpful is starting by just noticing your sensations, noticing what's coming up for you in your body and exploring that. And if you have the capacity to go further, you can ask yourself with curiosity and compassion, you know, what's coming up for me right now? And how am I holding this? And where might this be coming from? What might be getting touched in me right now through this experience? Have I experienced this before? And what was happening in that moment? And what's helped me when I felt this way before? And just approaching your emotional life with curiosity and the way that you would approach someone that you love with self-compassion, I think is hugely important. And also knowing that there is no perfection needed in being with ourselves and being with our feelings. You know, we're not going to respond to ourselves with compassion 100% of the time, but when we practice being with ourselves in that way, it can become easier and we can sort of rely on that in a more tangible way. But yeah, being with your feelings and your stuff is one of the most challenging things that we can do, I think. And that's not a failure of people. That's a understandable response to something that's hard. And I think when we do it in a way that's grounded and titrated and that's not rushed or pressured, we can sort of find our own rhythm in what we need. And we can know that when we're feeling a certain way, we might need a certain thing and get to know what that is for ourselves. I could talk about this forever, so I'll pause there.
You're good, because I just had this thought or idea of, is it ever too much? Because since it is so heavy, since there is a lot that comes up, is it ever too much for our brains, for our bodies to kind of process all that heaviness? Do we need breaks from all of this? Do we kind of need to say, I need a distraction because I can't stay in this deep, dark hole for much longer?
Totally. I think breaks and distractions are really underrated. Mm-hmm. I think we don't have the capacity to be with heaviness as often as we might feel like we should be. And it's only normal to not have the energy or the room to be with ourselves in that space all the time. And I think giving yourself permission to take breaks from going inward, to take breaks from exploring yourself, to take breaks from tuning into what you're feeling and letting yourself check out and knowing that you have permission to do that is so important and such an act of self-compassion. Because again, in this world of constant self-improvement, we can feel like we always need to be figuring ourselves out and we can always be needing to know what's going on with us and to find the meaning and all of that, which is great. And it can be too much sometimes, especially again, if you haven't been taught how to regulate yourself when you're in that experience. So I think knowing that it's totally normal and totally okay to need breaks from doing that work in an ongoing way is so important and can be such a resource for when it feels like it's too heavy.
Yeah, I love that. One of the things that you've talked about before is this idea of play. And I think it was a post where you were at an airport or something along those lines, and there was a child, and I don't remember quite what it was, but it was something along the lines of play a little longer. And those words have kind of stuck with me for a while now. I'm kind of wondering if you could share what play looks like for us adults. You know, we know what play looks like for children, but what would play look like for us?
Yeah, I've been trying to think of a definition that I have for play, and I still haven't come up with one that I think really encompasses it. But I think of it as just being present without needing an outcome and letting yourself do things just for the sake of doing them and giving yourself room to not be so serious and to do things from enjoyment and from curiosity and from excitement and joy and lightness and ease, and not just from the darker, deeper places. And I am naturally someone who lives in that world. Like, I'm a very inward feeling, deep thinking person. So play has to be very intentional for me, because it's not a natural thing for me to sort of let myself do things in a playful, light way. And it's taken a lot of work to cultivate that for myself. But now that I name play and lightness and ease as a priority for my well-being, I find it a lot easier to engage in that way. And it can be so many things. It can be drawing and not having it need to look like anything. It can be eating a popsicle, like doing these light things that aren't necessarily for some deep reason, but are just for enjoyment. It can be going on a swing at a playground. Movement can be play. Cooking can be play. Art, music, like anything that connects with you, that feels joyful and that brings up this sense of wonder, is so healing. And I think it can look different for everyone, but yeah, exploring what that might look like for you and figuring out ways to implement it into your life, I think is such a beautiful practice.
I love those. Love those. So obviously we are quote unquote experts in our field, along with many other therapists, along with other mental health practitioners, doctors, and yet we still, or I know that you do, and I definitely do, hold this idea or this belief that we are the experts in knowledge of sorts, but we're not the experts on anybody's lived in experience. And yet it still seems like all of us live in this world where we outsource that power to everyone but ourselves. And so everybody is an expert on everything but ourselves. Where do you think that we got this idea that everybody's an expert but us, and everybody knows so much more about the way that we should be eating, about how we should be moving, how we should be exercising, and essentially how we should live our lives? Where do you think that comes from?
I think it can come from a lot of places. I think it can come from, again, our upbringing, our family of origin, what we witnessed growing up. I think it comes from the patriarchal culture that we live in. I think it comes from the white supremacist culture that we live in, the idea that someone is superior and knows better than us. I think it's really harmful to assume that someone else knows us more than we do, because it outsources our power and our wisdom and our own sense of knowing. But it makes sense why so many people have that belief, because we're kind of programmed to not trust ourselves, and we're sort of programmed to think that someone else has the solution or the answer. And learning to trust yourself and to listen to yourself and to honor what you find there is so hard. It takes so much work and so much self-exploration, and sometimes it can feel easier to just ask someone else what they think, and it can feel easier to look at what someone else is doing and assume that's what you should be doing. And it can feel easier to, yeah, to not listen to yourself and pay attention. And it's not to say that sometimes we don't need advice or that we don't need information or support or more understanding. I think all of us need those things and all of us need help. And that's not a flaw. That's just a sign of being human. But I think the more that we can sort of develop our sense of self-trust and develop our sense of inner knowing and asking ourselves how we feel and asking ourselves what we need and asking ourselves what works for us and what feels supportive, the more we give ourselves the opportunity to show up for ourselves from that place and to know when we actually need support and another opinion and insight, and when we need to actually listen to what's coming up for us. And I think through doing healing work and through inner exploration and through getting to know yourself, you can develop these ways of being with yourself where you trust your own experience and you listen to your own knowledge and you can discern when something fits with you and resonates with you and when it doesn't, or when you actually need more information or more tools or more opinions or knowledge, and when you actually need to sort of circle back around and check in with yourself first.
Yeah, I have a client and we've talked about this idea of intuition or inner knowledge and that inner wisdom. And every time we get there, she's like, no, mine's broken. You know, like mine is definitely not a voice that I trust. It's definitely not something that leads me down the right path. What would you say to somebody who's kind of feeling that way?
Yeah, I think, again, for so many, it makes so much sense why you might not trust yourself. You know, if you were told that your feelings were wrong, if you were told not to be sad or not to feel angry or not to cry, or if you felt differently than you were told to feel, especially growing up, it's really hard to then trust how you feel if someone else didn't trust it, or if someone else told you that it wasn't okay or that something was wrong with it. And I think so much of our sense of self-trust comes from what we were sort of raised and programmed to believe by people who also probably didn't have a good sense of self-trust. And I think exploring, when did you first lose sight of your own sense of wisdom? When did you first lose sight of listening to yourself and honoring what you feel and paying attention to what you need? Like how did that come to be? And where might you have learned not to trust yourself? Where might you have learned not to pay attention to your intuition? What has happened that has potentially caused you to actually numb that out in a way? And normalizing it is, I think, so helpful, because when you normalize it, you're then exploring it from a place of, again, compassion instead of shame for feeling like something's wrong with you for not being able to connect to your intuition or to that part of yourself. I think so many experiences that so many people have make it understandable to not connect to themselves, because doing so could be painful. So sort of unlearning what you've experienced and then coming back to yourself is such an individual process and looks different for everyone. But I think it's such an important one, because we all do contain this inner knowing and this wisdom and intuition. It just sometimes gets buried by the things we've experienced and the messages we've received and the environments that we've lived in. So I think it's almost like a remembering rather than a building. Like, we already have it, we just have to remember. And I think that is a big part of the work.
Yeah. What about when it comes to trauma and our trauma responses and some of those things that we have built over the years to keep ourselves safe that may not be our intuition, but are definitely these programmed responses? How could we kind of begin to understand, this isn't my intuition, this is trauma, or these are the things that have happened to me that have led me to act this way, but it's not my inner knowing?
Yeah. I think working with a trauma-informed practitioner is so valuable in that, because when you've experienced trauma and you live with that experience within you, it's very hard to see outside of your own perspective and to even know that you might be disconnected from parts of yourself because of what you've experienced. And having that validated and normalized can be so healing, because for so many, they think something is wrong with them for being disconnected to parts of themselves. And I think one of the definitions of trauma that I love is anything that causes you to disconnect from yourself. Mm-hmm. And that process is so individual. And so I hesitate to say like a specific thing people can do, but mm-hmm. I think working with a practitioner, if that's your experience, so that you can start sort of piecing apart what you've experienced and how you might be holding it and how it might be affecting your responses and reactions, and starting to pull those apart so that you can see what is a trauma response and what is a self-protective response and a way of trying to keep yourself safe versus intuition or inner knowing or what your core self actually feels or believes or thinks. I think that is such deep work, and it's challenging work that usually requires someone else's support and guidance, because developing a sense of safety in that is so important. But I think once you allow yourself to start seeing, like, oh, this isn't my intuition, this is a trauma response that I'm having, and that doesn't mean I can't trust myself. It means I'm doing everything that I know how to do to keep myself safe. And like, what a gift that is to yourself. And we can unlearn those things and trace them to experiences and understand why they might have developed, in order to, again, like, remember what we actually know and remember that we do have a sense of inner knowing beyond the things that we've been programmed to have to feel like we need to rely on, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, that was beautiful. That was beautiful. I'm just processing that one, because there's a lot there to kind of think about, especially because I think that sometimes our definition of trauma is very limited, because we only think about big shock trauma, right? And we forget a lot about the relational trauma, or things that, you know, felt like were out of our control and we weren't able to act in ways that were in line with the way that we would have liked, you know. So this was out of my control and I had to follow along with this or that, but we wouldn't call that traumatic. We wouldn't say that that's something that we experienced as trauma. And yet, how you said this, you know, what disconnects us from ourselves is so powerful to think about, as, you know, even as a therapist, not just as a human. So that was really powerful. So something that you mention often is this idea, and you share amazing videos and pictures of nature, and, you know, especially where you are in your area, you have some amazing views. How is nature a part of your self-care, a way of, you know, kind of living and being in this world?
Yeah, nature is so important to me. And I didn't think of it as self-care until, yeah, maybe the last couple of years, where I've realized just how much I need it. It can be challenging to think of being in nature as self-care, because it's not really something you do. It's something that you are. And again, going back to the beginning of our conversation, just being in nature doesn't really feel like doing something, but it is so healing. And for me, I find being in nature and surrounding myself with the natural world in any way helps me to reconnect to myself and to tune into myself and to explore what's coming up for me in a place of like stillness and connectedness, rather than in the busyness of our normal day-to-day lives. I think nature is such a beautiful teacher, because so much of nature emulates like a process of healing, like growth, roots, storms, like so many things about nature that emulate our cycles, because we are a part of nature. And yeah, just being in open space and being outside just allows me to breathe easier. It allows me to reconnect to what matters to me. It's just such an important space to sort of step outside of the day-to-day life and routine that we can get in and be in a place that we can connect to in a different way. And I don't think that has to be in like a beautiful forest. I think it can be going on a walk.
It's helpful.
Yeah,
it's really
that's
helpful.
Totally helpful for sure. But I think you can experience similar inner experiences just going for a walk around the block, or going and looking at plants outside, or having plants in your home. Like, any way that you can connect to the natural world, I think is so, again, just so healing and important.
Beautiful. So something that you have shared with your community is your personal story and how you came to be. And, you know, it's a very powerful, powerful story. And thank you so much for sharing that with us all. And I'm just kind of curious as to what it means for you to share that story, to be present in that story and kind of show your process of coming into the world and where you are now and healing, because it's definitely a healing story. So kind of curious about that.
Yeah. I didn't share any parts of my story for so long because mm-hmm. it still held sort of nothing but pain for me mm-hmm. for a really long time. But once I got to a place of gleaning more than just pain from it, I just felt how nourishing and healing it was for me to share parts of it with people in my life, with my therapist. So it started not sharing with like a platform, but with a mm-hmm. couple people. And I think especially as an adoptee, stories are very important for adoptees, and understanding your story is very important. And for so many adoptees, there's not really space to be honest about the complexity of your story. And so sharing it as an adoptee is also just a big part of my healing process. Letting myself be open about what I've experienced when I wasn't really allowed to for a long time. Letting myself be open about the challenging and beautiful parts of it when that's not really something I could talk about for a long time. So I think it's healing for me on two different levels, on mm-hmm. my experience as being adopted, and also just my experience being a human. I think our stories are such a deep part of us, and I think we are so much more than our stories, and pieces of our story, while individual, connect to things that other people have experienced too that might be different than our experience, but that might have resulted in similar feelings or similar self-beliefs or similar ideas about who we are. And so for me, yeah, it just feels really important to share parts of my story, because I think parts of my story are so representative of what so many people struggle with, like mm-hmm. not belonging, wondering if you're worthy, believing in yourself, letting yourself be seen and heard, and not like all these things that are so universal that for so long people haven't talked about openly. And I think the more we talk about these things openly, the less shame there is. And I think the less shame there is, the more space we have to heal and to grow and to come into ourselves and to come home to ourselves. And I know that that has been my experience, and that doesn't mean everyone has to publicly share anything that they don't want to. And mm-hmm. for me, it just feels natural to share those parts of my story in order to share on a wider theme of the things I've experienced that I think so many people grapple with and are navigating.
Yeah, one of the things that I had read before is this idea of sharing from a place of scars and not of wounds. Is that something that you think about as well? Kind of like, okay, I'm able to share this because I've kind of healed that, or are these still wounds that you deal with on a regular basis?
Yeah, I definitely don't share things that I'm still really grappling with. Mm-hmm. I think it might seem like I share a lot, but I really don't feel like I do. I share a mm-hmm. lot about certain things that I've gone through because I feel like I've done so much work around those things and really integrated them, and it doesn't feel so tender, mm-hmm. but that share from your scars and not your open wounds thing is definitely something that I live by and that I think is a really good way of having boundaries around your own process and sharing in a way that feels nourishing rather than out of pressure or trying to perform vulnerability or trying to, yeah, appear a certain way. Like, I think it has to come from a genuine place of it feeling really good to share. Otherwise it can reopen those wounds, and it can, yeah, just be really challenging if it's not coming from that place of already feeling integrated into who you are. So I think that's really something to pay attention to. And it's definitely something that I pay attention to when I share anything.
You said something that kind of caught my attention, this idea of performing vulnerability. That kind of just like, ooh, it hit me, because is it coming from this place of I'm gonna share something because I want you to reciprocate and say something back to me, or kind of create that bond? And I think that's something that many of us do, you know, kind of using vulnerability to gain closeness or kind of, you know, create connection with somebody. And that can also leave us feeling like we've kind of put it all out there, right? So how do we share vulnerably without performing vulnerability? Or like, how do you even go about all that? Because that's tough.
Yeah, it's so tough. And I think everyone engages in some sense of that in some ways, whether it's in their relationships or elsewhere. I think it's only normal to sort of sometimes struggle to find that line. But I think something that can be really helpful is like, am I sharing this in order to get a need met? And if I'm sharing this in order to get a need met, what happens if I don't get the response that I need? Or what happens if I don't get the reaction that I wanted? And exploring what you're needing from sharing can be really valuable, because often you might be needing reassurance or validation or connection. And if you can navigate what you're needing from sharing certain things, it sometimes becomes easier to discern if you actually want to share it, or if you want to find other ways to get that need met that might feel more safe or more aligned for you. I think that can be a really interesting exploration when it comes to vulnerability, because often I think people can overshare because they're trying to connect, or they're trying to be vulnerable, when vulnerability is not really something that we have to like try to do. It's just something that happens when we feel safe. Mm-hmm. So I think, yeah, making that discernment is really helpful.
Oh, I love that. I love that. I'm going to have to keep that in mind, because I know just who to say that to. So just one last thing kind of in closing, because I feel like we could talk for hours, but you have got a book that you are writing, I believe, and you talk a lot about creativity and, you know, kind of all these flows of things. So talk to me a lot about your creativity process and how it is to be writing a book and kind of what that's like for you.
Yeah, I love writing. It's one of my biggest passions. It's something that I feel so like myself when I'm doing. So it just feels really natural to explore different ways of writing. And the book has been one of those things. Moving through this project has been very challenging and has brought up a lot. Mm-hmm. It's a lot different to write a whole book than it is to write like a blog post. Yeah. So it's just taken a lot of inner exploration and really owning what I say and getting more clear around what my beliefs are and what I want to share and how. But outside of the book, I think creativity is such an important part of ourselves to cultivate and to tap into. I think everyone is inherently creative. Elizabeth Gilbert wrote a book called Big Magic, which is a beautiful book about creativity and how to form a relationship with your creativity. And for me, and I think for so many people, it's just such a good way to connect with yourself and to get to know yourself in new ways and to express yourself and to, yeah, put yourself out there in different ways, whether it's just in your journal or in an Instagram post or any other thing that you create. I have found creativity to be a big part of my sort of everyday process and a big part of just who I am and what I really identify as a value of mine. Writing the book has been a really big way of tapping into that creativity. Doing so in a bigger way.
Are you allowed to say what it's about? Is it personal, more on the personal side, more on the educational side? Details?
It's sort of a mix of both. I don't know how much I'm allowed to say about it, but yes. I can say that it's about understanding our stories and how they impact us and how to carry them forward. That's like the most basic description I can give, but
I like it already. Yeah. I'm ready for it, Lisa. I'm so ready for it. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to connect today and kind of share all your goodness with us. I know that all the things that you have shared will hit somebody just in the right moment and just in the right spot. And I've said this before, but your voice is so soothing and I could just listen to you for hours. So thank you for the way that you show up and for being here.
Thank you so much for inviting me. It was so sweet to connect with you. And yeah, I'm just so grateful for your work and your presence.
Thank you so much. Thank you for tuning in to the Mind Meets Body podcast. If you like what you heard, make sure to hit the subscribe button below. If you're looking for more things Holistically Grace, check out my Instagram at Holistically Grace and my website, www.holisticallygrace.com. Please be mindful that the conversations found on the podcast are for educational purposes only. They're not meant to diagnose, treat, or replace the personalized care provided by a trained professional. In fact, it is my hope that these topics encourage you to reach out and seek help, no shame attached. Until next time, friends, stay compassionate.